everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Top Flight Pod. You know what it is. You know what we're here to do. Back on screen today, beautiful Austin, Texas. I'm with the boys. We got Neff and we got my G, Phil West. You know him from the Verde Substack. One of the, probably the best reporter in the Austin FC local area. Phil, starting off with you, mate. How are you doing today, bro?
I'm doing good. Yeah, my birthday was Friday and got a bunch of Austin FC news to drop for my birthday. That was very kind of them. Share a birthday with Nick Lima. As it turns out, I am much older. But yeah, no, things are good. Just recovering from a little bit of a cold. So if my voice is a little weirder than you're normally accustomed to, that's why. But yeah, things are good.
It's happy birthday, mate.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Happy birthday. Happy birthday. Yeah, everybody. Everybody said happy birthday to Phil on the Discord chat. Also, a couple people on Twitter said happy birthday to you as well. Nick Lima also, happy birthday to him. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the rumor is that he's going to be moving out. He's going to be traded. So I don't know if Phil West is going to be traded or going to be moving out. But hopefully Phil West stays here with us in Austin.
Yeah, now, I'm not sure that I want to be in Boston. But
there you go. Exactly. Stay here, mate. Now, Neff, how you doing, brother? Welcome to the show, man.
Hey, yeah. I'm doing all right. You know, I think you and I got some beef to settle after Friday as well, huh?
There's no beef. There was clear evidence. There was video footage of us celebrating as teammates.
Oh, it was there.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I seem to recall you did the VAR on one of my goals and you wrongfully called that. You know,
oh, it was out. It was out, and you know it.
It was definitely not out, and my lawyers will be. Well, my people will talk to your people. Let's put it
y'all, y'all play pickup on Friday, right?
Exactly.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
Exactly.
Well,
that's exactly what I was gonna say next.
Hold on.
Let's tell the people what exactly we're talking about. Friday, we had pickup with some of the Patreon and Discord members at Avila Soccer in Round Rock. A lot of fun. A bunch of people showed out. We were playing, 4v4? Sometimes one of the team had five. Yeah. There was some moments of chippiness, I guess you could say. A little bit of banter. A little bit of banter between some friends. And that's all. And a little bit of here and there. I don't think there's nothing much you can have out
robbed.
To it, bro. It's all good, man. Shout out to everybody that did go out there. We had a lot of fun. We're going to be doing it more. We're going to be having more pickups. If it's not indoor, a lot of folks were asking if we could have some sessions outside, you know, maybe go to some fields out in Round Rock or North Austin or in South Austin. And we're going to get to it. We're going to be playing some more pickup soccer with everybody out there. And even we reached out to Kevin Morris with his LDR Slack group. And we might even have a bit of a group chat rivalry battle between the LDR Slack group and the Weird Austin TV Discord group. So stay tuned for that. A little quick 7v7 LDR Slack versus Weird Austin TV Discord. Stay tuned, y'all.
I'm in both. That does that mean I'm gonna ref then?
You can ref. Yeah, you can. I'd be down. We have like three or four people that are in both group chats that we're gonna have to say, hey, are you going to ref or are you going to pick one of those teams? So we're going to see what happens there. Very interesting. But real quick, to recap a wild weekend in the Weird Austin TV offices, that's what I put into the show notes. I want to start off with Ethan Finley because he was at the Verde store and y'all know how I feel about Ethan Finley. I got off work a little bit early. I had time to go get a real quick haircut, a little bit of a trim. Wasn't really that much. Just cleaned it up for this family party that I had. And I had time at the end, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to go meet Ethan Finley. I saw that I had about 45 minutes left. He was going to be at the Verde store until like 4:30. So I pulled up, and Ethan Finley was there. It was about towards the end of it, so there wasn't that many people there anymore. There was two or three. So I had a little bit of a moment with Ethan Finley where we got to chat for about 10 minutes, and then the kid came in, and then they did their thing, and we had another chat, and we were just back and forth, right? Just real quick, some highlights from the conversation that we had. I congratulated him on his new contract. We talked about how the city has a big chunk of it that's asking for Mexican players. But both him and I, well, it was mainly me, agreeing that we don't necessarily need a Mexican player to win an MLS trophy. Also, this is very important. Ethan Finley did say that he appreciates the criticism that comes from the fans because he said he has the thickest skin in the league, right? So he can take it. So he says that everybody out there, if you put pressure on the team, he says that he can take it because Ethan Finley knows how to, I guess, He doesn't really dish it, but he can definitely take it. So shout out to my G, Ethan Finley. Now, Phil, you're somebody that got to talk to him a lot this season. What are your thoughts on Ethan Finley, I guess you could say, in 2024?
Yeah, he's great. I mean, he's just a, you know, kind of a solid stand up, you know, kind of consummate locker room guy. You know, like I think I've talked to you a little bit about, you know, just kind of his approach to everything. Like, I think he gives 100% like all the time. I don't know that you're necessarily going to get great performances out of him every game, but he's definitely going to give you whatever he's got from game to game. So I think, you know, obviously you just have to kind of watch him as a coach and figure out, you know, is he effective? You know, he's the kind of player where you can plug in the last 30 or you can have him go for, you know, 60, 70 and then, you know, take him out and, you know, generally no complaints. I think there was kind of something that happened in one game where supposedly he was miffed at Wolf and there was like some video evidence or whatever. And people are trying to make things out of that as people do. But yeah, I mean, I think he's in the right place. I mean, he's a good, solid addition to have to the team. And again, you know, with the number that he's probably going to be on, I think he makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, that's actually one of the things that I mentioned to him, Phil, when I was there talking to him at the Verde store. I told him, I was like, you were one of the no-brainers, man. I mean, you were on an okay amount salary-wise. We didn't talk much about the number that he's making, but his goal contributions and kind of where he's at in his career and how he's one of the top performers for Austin FC since he's arrived. You know, whenever he got here, he wasn't really expected to do much, and consistently he's been one of our best guys that at least gives you 90 to 100% every single game, and that's why I appreciate Ethan Finley as much as I do. And I told him that I was happy that I actually got to meet him, and it's been coming. I know he's done a couple of those and I haven't made it. This one I was like, you know what, I'm gonna finally go meet Ethan Finley.
Yeah, and this one too. I mean, we knew about his fortunes a little bit earlier than the rest of the team just because he was actually not on an option year. They had to do the deal, but they did that pretty quickly. I mean, I think they were probably holding this news because they wanted to do everything at once in one fell swoop, and there were some things to still kind of work out. You know, you saw, like, you know, Miami, for example, they did theirs pretty early, and they still had two players that they were still discussing. So there's kind of an ongoing conversations category, yep, which Austin has too with Hector Jimenez. But basically, I mean, yeah, and this is interesting, and I will talk about this later, but Austin obviously let a lot of players go. Miami only let two players go, right? So Joseph Martinez, most notably there, and then Jake LaCava, who nobody knows who he is really, right?
Yeah, so Joseph, big name there, right? Big
yeah, one. For sure. But the fact that they were pretty set with most of their team and just, you know, need to add one Luis Suarez and they're set, you know, versus kind of the reinvention that we're going to see with Austin. But I know we're going to get into that in a bit.
That's going to be a big one, Luis Suarez in Miami. Now, one of the other things that went on this weekend that was pretty wild was I got to meet the Give and Go podcast guys. Now, a lot of people out there know who they are. There's still some folks that don't really know who they are. They have a podcast here. They're based in Austin. They do everything from international to club to Champions League, everything, right? They don't just focus on, you know, on one team just like we do here, right? It was actually really cool meeting them. I got to be on set for a pretty, maybe it's a historic pod, because they had tactical manager there. They had Brett Oppenheimer there that apparently is a lot more famous than I thought he was. No disrespect to him. I mean, he's an actor, apparently. He's a lawyer also. And I told him, I was like, hey, man, can you take a picture of us? And he gladly did. So shout out to him. I also bought him Whataburger. So maybe that's what he did. I don't know. But they also had this famous like TikToker and YouTuber. His name's Jake Banford or Benford. A lot of like 6 or 7, 8 year old kids were coming up to him at Q2 Stadium. They're like, hey man, give me an autograph. So I clearly see his demographic is like FIFA kids coming up, right? That's what that's the kind of people he follow him. But he's a really cool dude, and that podcast was super awesome, man. Super awesome. I don't know if you could say it like that. It was great, honestly. I sat in, listened to it in person, and then I listened to it driving around, and they did a really good job talking about USA. Their predictions were kind of bad because USA did struggle, and that's what I want to talk about right now. You know, I want to talk about the whole experience of the US Men's National Team game.
Wait. You got to talk about how you parlayed that into like total star treatment. Like, we were supposed to meet before the game, and then you were like, oh, bro, something came up. I'm gonna sweep.
Oh, you yeah, too. So, He did that to you too.
So both of you lads.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so both of you lads. Okay, I have to apologize. I did say sorry, but I don't know how it happened. It kind of just like developed all super quick. I was eating at Terry Black's barbecue with everybody knows who Max Brados is, MLS commentator. He's done a lot for the sport in this country. Shout out to him. Very good mind. I mean, intelligent guy when he talks about this sport. But we were also with a bunch of content creators from all over the USA that make content for US soccer. And apparently US soccer and this actor Brett, and he's also a lawyer, he also was the voice of the recent Austin FC hype video ahead of the Q2 match. They pretty much got all these creators together and they wanted to give them special treatment or the VIP suite experience at Q2 Stadium. And somehow I got grandfathered in. I got invited by my G, tactical manager. And since I was hanging out with them days before the game, I guess maybe Brett was like, you know what, whatever, this guy can come also. But whenever we were headed to the game, I was pretty much the kind of tour guide. They didn't know what gate to go into. And I was like, oh, you need to go to the VIP lobby? It's in the Southwest. So they were like, all right, you know what? We'll just follow this guy. And I had freaking all these content creators, Brados, Brett following me around. So I had a bit of a responsibility to these guys. And I think they had a good time at Q2. I try to sneak in as many questions as I could. Like, hey, what do you think of Austin? What do you think of Q2 Stadium? You like it? 1 to 10. And they were all saying 8, 9, 10. They had a great time at Q2. So how did I score it, man? I just got lucky. I kind of gambled. They could have said, you know what? Nah, man, you're not a content creator with this party. You got to go to your regular seat. But they were very cool. They said, now, you know what? You've been hanging out with this whole day. Tactical manager knows you. Come on in. And I was like, you know what? Whatever. We're here. That's and right. I had a really good time. Sometimes you just got to go with the flow. And that's exactly what I did. Exactly.
What'd you get to eat and drink there? Was it?
Dude, they had everything, man. They had a little bit of everything from the Q2 Stadium. I saw they had Valentinas. They had wraps. They had a bunch of, like, asparagus. You should check out, if y'all haven't already, check out the Tactical Manager vlog. I was the one recording the scene where he's, like, explaining what they had, like, to eat. And they had a lot. I actually snuck out a barbecue sandwich, and I ate it on the way home. I was like, dude, I just had to get one. They had drinks like crazy. Brados was having a great time. I think they brought wine for him. It was a really cool experience. Austin FC and US Soccer for sure treated them right. They had a great time. But that was the experience, I guess you could say. Real quick, let's just recap the game just a little bit. Because USA did leave it until the very end. So, Phil, what was your thoughts? And then I'll get Neff's thoughts on the atmosphere because he has something to say on that. So, Phil, USA yeah. left it till the very end, but they won 3-0. Mm-hmm. It was a flattering scoreline, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, at the end, it ended up being that. Yeah, it was just really frustrating. I mean, it wasn't great until it was, right? So, in that, again, part of that is, you know, obviously, you know, Pulisic's out, Way is out. So they don't have necessarily the full strength squad that they would have. Adams is still out, obviously. So Tillman in particular, I didn't think looked very good. But Paredes, they, you know, Paredes, they managed. Bro. He was okay. And Dest had some kind of interesting moments yeah. in there. You know, I thought he looked really promising at times, and then other times it was, you know, not so much. But I mean, on the whole, I mean, they did kind of what you would expect them to do, right? So they wore down Trinidad. I mean, obviously, there was the red card that happened in the first half. So, you know, it really should have happened sooner. I mean, to leave it to the 82nd minute is kind of scary. But seeing, yeah, I was just kind of in a normal seat in the first half, and then I went down to the support section for the second half, about four rows behind the goal, and kind of off to the side, and saw Pepe warming up. I mean, Pepe was warming up like right in front of me with the other players, and it looked like he was really, really ready to go. And I knew he was going to get in there and score a goal. I just had a feeling about it. And sure,
great minds think alike, Phil West, because yeah. I got major points up in that suite with those content creators and with the people that were there, because when I saw Pepe warming up, and really after seeing USA struggle and miss chance after chance after chance, you know, I said to the guys, I was like, look, y'all, Pepe needs to come on and he's going to change the game because he's going to score. I told him, I was like, Pepe, when he comes to Q2, he mm-hmm. scores. And I think Greg Berhalter yep. mentioned something like that at the end of the game. And as an Austin FC fan, it pains me to say that when Pepe comes to Q2, Pepe scores. But I got major points with him, and I want to say a shout out to Mr. Pepe, because after he scored, everybody turned around and they were like, "You called it." Bredo said it. I felt so cool whenever Max Bredo said that. I'm not even gonna cap. Max Bredo's turned around and he said, "You called it." And I was like, "Yes, I did. Yes, I did." So that was a really special moment. But yeah, Phil, you said Pepe scored. He came on. He did what he had to do. And who scored the second one? It was Miles Robinson. Not Miles Robinson.
Jedi. Anthony Robinson.
Anthony Robinson.
Yeah. And then Gio got the third.
And then Gio Reyna. Dest, though, you did mention him, Phil West. Dest, I don't know if he convinced me. No, I don't. I like USA. I like L3. I don't know if we can call them that anymore. But my main focus in that match, Phil, was looking at Dest, because there is a corner of the Austin FC fandom that thinks that Dest would be a good fit for Austin FC. So I was thinking, you know what? I'm going to look at this guy. How many more times am I going to get the opportunity to see Dest play live? And I was not impressed. He had good moments, but he was locked down pretty much. And then he walked the chance.
I'm going to dig into that a little bit more early this week, I think. So,
okay.
I'm just kind of a sneak preview. I kind of hinted at it in one of my last articles, just kind of a direction they could go with DP. I don't think they're going to be able to do it. I think he's still on way too much money. I think he's still locked into Europe. Like he's talked about wanting to play, but he's talking about wanting to play like much longer. I could definitely see Josh Wolf salivating over having a fullback like that. And I think it'd be really interesting. But I also don't know that it would necessarily work in the way that you would want a DP signing to work, especially the one who would be on the level of money that you'd probably have to pay him to get him here.
That's true. Now, Neff, I do want to get your take on the atmosphere at Q2, because you were there, mate. At first, I was talking to the Give and Go guys because I was mainly watching the game with them. There were some really cool dudes. I'm so glad that I got to meet them in this experience. But we were talking about it at first, and it looked like the stadium was going to be a bit empty. But when the game started, 10 minutes in, it really got packed. And I saw a few empty seats. But, Neff, what was your thoughts on the atmosphere of the USA game at Q2?
I think, and not disrespect, of course, but I think games like this make me appreciate the atmosphere that Austin FC fans bring into Q2 Stadium.
Neff appreciated. Okay, go.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a very different vibe. I mean, you got to take it for what it's worth. I mean, I went with a couple friends that, which shout out to them, gave me a free ticket. So shout out to them. But you could just tell, just going into the stadium, it was very, very different. Of course, it's not going to be the same people, but you definitely see the difference of having Namurga in there and what they bring to the table. And I think any player that has, like, for example, Pepe would tell you it's very, very different seeing La Murga, Los Verdes in there, to the atmosphere that what's the USA supporter group here?
The American Outlaws.
Yeah, American Outlaws, to what they could, the atmosphere that they brought, which by no means was bad. I mean, it was just very, very different. Very different.
Yeah, it was kind of flat. I mean, I've seen the U.S. fans better, like the Gold Cup game against Qatar a couple years ago. Like that was more animated. I mean, still, I mean, you know, Los Verdes and La Murga and Anthem and all them, they do incredible work. Everything's very coordinated. Absolutely. Everything's very loud. They know the stadium really, really well. So you are going to have that advantage with a club supporters group versus someone like American Outlaws, who doesn't really get into the stadium a lot. But it just, yeah, it didn't seem that dynamic at all. So yeah,
I will say I was fairly surprised to, because I'm not very familiar with like U.S. men's national team, like the supporter group and everything. I was very surprised to hear chants in Spanish. I heard like a couple, like 2-3.
Really?
I was very surprised. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it was.
Okay. Well, it was funny that you mentioned that, Neff, because hanging out with these dudes that were brought in to watch this game, the tactical manager, Zealand, the TikTok Benford guy, one thing that they kept talking about all weekend really was the fact that the chants were kind of boo-boo. They kind of suck for the U.S. men's national team. And if they could change one thing about the culture, it would be for us to get better chants. They were saying how at the World Cup, there was only one chant. how they hate the chance that they have right now, that they're so cheesy. That's why people make fun of them. So they were kind of talking down on a little bit of the chant culture that's around US men's national team. So I'm sure they would change it. Austin FC, I guess this is just a really good point, like how we need to appreciate the atmosphere that the supporter groups bring to Q2 Stadium when Austin FC plays. I think Neff hit it spot on.
No, absolutely.
Good stuff. Good stuff there, Mike. Now, just to wrap up.
I think.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Neff.
No, I was just to follow up on that. I mean, I think that as the league grows, as the fan culture grows, there's a lot of room for improvement in every single area. And Austin FC, that's one thing that Austin FC fans have done very, very well. You know, they are an example for the league.
Yeah, and there was a conscious choice to do that. I mean, they definitely worked on game day and definitely studied and figured out this is what's going to work best in the stadium and cultivated it. And that's really important. I mean, especially, you know, for those of us who can't be in a suite getting complimented by Max Brettos and sneaking mm-hmm. barbecue sandwiches out, we have to, you know, have the in stadium experience that, you know,
one day, Phil. Right. We'll get there one day.
Hey, man, I don't know if I'll ever be able to be in a suite at Q2 Stadium again. But you know what? Austin FC should put some of its content creators in a suite for one game at least once. It'd be awesome. It'd be a great time. I know that they could afford it. I mean, they were able to afford Rodney Redes for X period of time. They could afford anything in this world. But just to wrap it up, shout out to Brett Oppenheimer. Shout out to US Soccer. Shout out to the Give and Go guys, tactical manager, for helping me hang around with this great group of guys. Everybody that flew into Austin, hopefully they had a great time. I tried to be the best host that I could for everybody that is in Austin, so these people can hopefully come back and say good things about Q2 Stadium, because they're gonna come and go. We're the ones that stay, so it was important to me to be a good host to these folks, so that way they go back to where they need to go and say, you know what, that guy from Weird Austin TV, that whole city, they were great hosts. Q2 Stadium is awesome, and we should definitely go back. So shout out to everybody for this wonderful experience. Now gentlemen, to talk about some international call-ups that are going on in the Austin FC universe, we have some guys out on international duty now. Just to kind of go through them real brief so we can get to the roster conversation, I know that's what a lot of people are listening to this pod here today for. But we're going to start off with Mr. Bobosi Biarhuanga and Uganda. Unfortunately, they lost 2-1 to Guinea. Bobo was rumored to miss out on this match due to picking up an injury in training, but he started this match. He picked up a yellow and was subbed out after the half. At minute 46, or maybe right before the half, maybe in added time. Uganda will face Somalia on Tuesday, November 21st at 7 a.m. as they continue their journey in these qualifiers. Now, Phil, you have any thoughts on this suspected injury or rumored injury for Bobo? Because he did pick up a yellow and then he was subbed out.
No, I mean, it's so hard to get news from these games, you know. So it really is. I mean, everything I know about this game, I know from FOTMOB basically. So yeah, like you were saying, he picked up a yellow right before the half. It was for a bad foul. You know, this Guinea goal that came late, like 95th minute, was the difference maker in it. So, but I mean, he's getting regular starts for this team. And again, we're talking about Guinea's the 80th team in the world with the FIFA world rankings. Uganda's 90th. So, you know, we're talking about teams kind of in that. You know, for CONCACAF, you know, thinking about Curacao, Haiti, Trinidad and Tobago, they're kind of in that range, right, of teams. So these are not by any means best teams in the world. These are not teams that are probably going to make the World Cup. But at the same time, they're, you know, it's a decent, you know, again, especially for where he's at, you know, being a Verdos player and trying to aspire to something greater. You know, it's good that he's getting these regular, you know, first team minutes with a national team. It's good to have that kind of experience to bring into a domestic squad. But again, I mean, it's, you know, it's just not that's not the game I'm automatically going to turn to if I have, you know, a whole spectrum of choices to look at, but just to kind of see, you know, if I happened upon it on TV, yes, I would watch for a few minutes and see kind of what he's doing. And
hey, facts. And, you know, no disrespect to the Cranes or to Mr. Bobo, but you know, they I think the time was also like hard to keep up with. But we do follow and we try to keep up as much as we can. And FootMob, SofaScore, Google, they do as much as they can to give us the information. But like I said, the next game for Uganda, this one will be a little bit more easier. They play Somalia Tuesday, November 21st at 7 a.m. if you want to tune in there. Now, Bobo, just a quick reminder to everybody out there, he is on loan, I believe, with the purchase option. So we'll see what happens with I guess our most decorated international player, and he's on our FCito side. So we'll see what happens there with Bobo. I want to move into Micah Burton, y'all. Maybe this one will have a little bit of more stat and information, because there is more of a keep up with the U17 World Cup that's going on right now in Indonesia. Now, Micah Burton and the USA U17s fell 3-0 or 0-3, however you want to put it, versus France. A brace from Trinquer, maybe that's how you say it, Trinquer, and a late goal from Meupiu. This result sends our boys to second place in Group E and also into the round of 16, where they will face Germany on Tuesday, November 21st at 2:30 a.m. Phil, are you going to stay up for this one, or are you going to wake up?
I don't know. I really don't. I was just trying to search and see if Uganda Somalia was on any TV packages at all that you can get in the U.S. I don't think so. I mean, yeah. So, I mean, on Mike, I mean, just kind of a couple thoughts there. I mean, you know, first of all, it's France. France is really good. So at all levels, you know, obviously, you know, you've seen what the senior team does. You've seen what kind of youth development France has. I mean, they're a machine. They're loaded. They're perpetually loaded. And then Burton played again as a 9 in this game. So, yes. Which is what he seems to be doing at this level. I know the Moon Tower guys have talked about this a lot, and you know, he's better at either side of a center forward in the front three, but actually putting him at the 9, I don't think at all is his best position. I definitely agree with Landon on that. And so it's a little weird to see him in that configuration. But he's getting good minutes, yes, you know, activated. I mean, it's very promising for his development again that he's getting these kind of national team looks. And again, he's an interesting player. I mean, I feel like maybe he might get his homegrown designation next year, right, in 24, and might actually see some minutes at that point. I don't know if he's quite ready to get a lot of those, but we might kind of see what happened with Rodriguez or Noel in terms of, you know, these kind of spot call-ups. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, kind of when they put that label on him, because once they do that, then it becomes more valuable.
That's true. Now, one thing that I did want to point out in this match against France for Micah was this is his first start in the U17 World Cup, if I'm not mistaken. He's been coming off the bench in the last two games. And I was curious as to why they would choose to start him in this match, because he was paired up against some really tall center backs. And you did point out, Phil, earlier that the 9 might not be the best position for Micah, and also Landon pointing that also. So, I mean, I'm just confused as to why not give him a go in the earlier matches in this group stage. And then versus France, I mean, was there a better option, or you think this was a good time for him to start?
I don't know.
You know, it's tough.
I'm suspecting maybe like change of pace. Maybe they just need to try something new. Maybe, you know, forwards who had played in the other games had some knocks or something like that. Maybe they were just kind of looking for his speed and his abilities there. You know, he's not a traditional number 9, so he's not going to be, you know, a guy to cross it to and expect him to get his head on it, right? Yeah. So he's, you know, his game is different than that.
Now, even though it was 3-0, 0-3, Phil and F, at one point, it could have been 1-1, because there was a very solid chance for Medina, if I'm not mistaken, the player that got this chance on a platter. He shoots it, and the French goalkeeper kind of saves it with his legs, with his feet, kind of a Keylor Navas-esque save. It was a really good save. It was a bit of a rocket shot, but really should have done better. Micah was to his left. Would have been cool if he would have laid it off to him, but at that point, there's no other option but to shoot. And the kid didn't really take the chance the right way. But hey, this U17 World Cup, you're going to mess up, man. And just, you know, try to move forward. You know, it's not the end of the day. They got Germany in the round of 16, like we were saying. And we'll see what happens there. Any final thoughts on Mike? I mean, wasn't there a bit of an injury? I saw on SofaScore that he was subbed off with a bit of a knock, but on other pages there was nothing saying anything about of an injury. I couldn't confirm it. There's nothing out there saying it. So is he good? He should be, right?
I mean, I hope, yeah. I mean, I haven't seen anything on it. You'd mentioned Medina. Medina's really good, right? He's I think San Jose still, right?
I believe so. I don't have much knowledge on him.
Yeah, he's great. So, like, he's someone who, I mean, obviously you're kind of thinking about Burton and his progression through. Medina, I think, is one that really could go from these ranks, you know, into, you know, the full national team in a few years if his development kind of continues the way that people think it will.
Interesting. Now, just real quick on the Michael Burton note, when I was with the guys up in that VIP suite, I'm not going to talk about this. I'm not going to stop talking about this for the rest of the year because I'm so hyped on it still, right? I'm still buzzing. But I did mention Michael Burton to them, right? I said, hey, we got this guy, Michael Burton. He's coming up the ranks. What do you guys think? A couple of them didn't rate him at all. There was some homies from their channel is American Ultras Talk. Shout out to them, Braden and Yuri. One of the kids is from Brazil. The other one is from Indianapolis. Really cool young guys and very knowledgeable on the U.S. men's national team and a really small channel. And they got invited by U.S. Soccer and Oppenheimer. So shout out to American Ultra Soccer Talk for, I guess, their ball knowledge. But they kind of showed love to Michael Burton. But most of the guys in that box, just the creators, not talking about Bredos or anybody else, but they didn't really rate Michael Burton. They were saying that they didn't see any Pulisics coming up in the future for USA, any like Weas, any McKennies or anything like that. So I'm curious to see what comes out of the younger generations of the USA team. They're a young team already in the first A squad, I guess you could say, but they're still very young coming up. There's a lot of talent, but they say that they don't see a lot of that firepower coming up. So we'll see what happens. Now, let's talk about Costa Rica. Let's talk about Costa Rica because that's our last guy that had international action before we get into the roster moves, and Julio Cascante with Costa Rica. Now they fell 3-0 to Panama at home in Costa Rica. And one of the reasons why we're going to talk about this is obviously Julio Cascante didn't play. But Costa Rican fans on Twitter were left fuming after Cascante did not feature in the match versus Panama. The argument was that Julio was doing well with the national team leading up to this game and should have started to keep building on what they had been working on. I do want to remind everybody that the recent numbers of Cascante with Costa Rica, he started and went the full 90 in the win versus Saudi Arabia in St. James Park. Julio received a 6.6 match rating there. And then he also started and went the full 90 in the loss versus the United Arab Emirates. They lost 4-1, but he scored Costa Rica's goal. We all remember that header. That game was in Croatia, if I'm not mistaken. There was no match rating because, like Phil West and I talked about earlier, it's hard to get some stats on some of these games. And just like we noted right now, he did see no minutes versus Panama in the Nations League first leg at home. So on this one, I want to start off with my GNF. The main question that I have for you is, if Julio Cascante featured in this game, could the scoreline have been different? Now, either positive or negatively, because Austin FC fans came out and they said if Cascante played, it would have been 5. It would have been 6. So, Neff, I want to ask you, where do you side on that? Could Julio have affected this game positively on the defense side of things, or was it a lost cause if he played, either or?
I think it's a twin cause at that point. I mean, there's arguments for both sides, but you've seen some games here in Austin where that's precisely the case, where he cost you a couple points. But you've also seen, you know, like you mentioned, those recent international call-ups where he did fairly well. So maybe he is one of those players where when it comes to international duty, he's just a different player, a more focused type of player. So I think there's arguments for both sides, but I think it's pretty brutal that the Austin FC fan base came at Julio that way.
It wasn't the whole fan base, though, Nev. It wasn't the whole fan base. It was
no, absolutely no. But the same thing that did it
says a lot.
I think it surprised me more than anything. Okay. At the end of the day, it's a valid opinion because, you know, the results we've seen here in Austin.
Of course. Now, real quick, I want to just dissect the three goals that Panama did score before we get Phil's take on this. The first goal that Panama scored on Costa Rica was a free kick worldie. I don't know if Navas is injured. Neff, if you could find a bit of info on that, because it wasn't Navas in goal. It was somebody else. And I can't help but think that Navas would have saved that razor of a free kick for Costa Rica. But anyways, worldie free kick, nothing Julio could have done there. The second goal, this is interesting because the center back, the number 4, if I'm not mistaken, Gonzalez or Valero, but I need to find out what it was. But anyways, their number 4 center back, he's in the attacking half of the field. he gives a lazy pass, loses the ball. Panama initiates a counterattack, and he himself is beaten in a foot race by the goal scorer. Now, I can't help but think that, number one, Cascante will definitely be beat in a foot race, 100%. I'm not going to say he's a fast center back because he's not, being real. But one point that I see here is Cascante, if one thing that he's good at is short passes, at least. You know, and Cascante, maybe 8 out of 10 times, will secure you that pass from the center back to the left back, or the center back to the number 6 or to the number 8, whatever, the CDM. So maybe Cascante could have affected that second goal or prevented that second goal. But the third goal, that was just a beautiful counterattack by Panama, initiated by Coco Carrasquilla, who really has transformed this Panama side. I mean, Panama went from being an easy dub in CONCACAF to being like, oh shoot, these guys have gotten to the final in important trophies in this region now, and they got players like Coco. So I mean, I think people need to start respecting Panama a little bit more. They have owned Costa Rica, though. I think they've beaten them 4 times in a row, if I'm not mistaken. So it could be 5th coming up in that second leg of that matchup. We'll see what happens. But Phil, your thoughts on Cascante with Costa Rica and really everything going on with him?
Yeah, there's a couple different things. I mean, first of all, just kind of looking at the matchup a little bit more macro. So they're at about the same place in the world rankings. You know, Panama's 44th, Costa Rica's 46th, but Panama's definitely on an upward trajectory. I mean, obviously, you know, they've done well in recent tournaments in CONCACAF. Carrasquilla, obviously, as you mentioned, I mean, he's fantastic. I thought he was going to maybe move in the summer. I would not expect him to be in Houston much longer. I think he's bound for Europe. He's phenomenal, and he's done a really good job. So the scoreline didn't quite surprise me. I mean, Costa Rica's in this kind of weird transitional phase right now. I mean, you finally have Cascante getting called up, but they have this kind of golden generation that is, you know, now on the way out. I mean, you still have some vestiges of that. You still have Joel Campbell remarkably getting starts.
He was captain.
Yeah, I kind of am curious to see. I didn't get to watch this game, but I want to make a point of seeing Cascante on a Costa Rican team, just to kind of see if he's played the same way that he is in Austin. I mean, I consider Cascante to be much more of an offensive center back. So you look at his kind of goals added numbers, he's only 2nd to Drew. Seeing a lot of that has to do with his movement on the ball, obviously, right? So his ability to pass, his ability to progress play. Obviously, he gets burned on defense now and again. So, you know, hence the Austin fans being mean about that. But, you know, he's not the worst center back on that roster either. So, you know, they have Francisco Calvo on that roster. So, you know, if you want to point to somebody who's even more kind of mistake prone and card happy, you know, Calvo, I think, is your guy. But I don't know that it would have made a difference in this game, though, really. I mean, it sounds like the goals that happened would have happened regardless. And yeah, Panama is just really good right now.
Panama's really good right now. You're right. And I think if there was goals through the air, maybe a corner kick or a set piece, Cascante could have definitely maybe helped there. We've seen in Austin, he's not been too much of a help in some set pieces for us, but he is a very tall center back, an aerial threat. And if he's good in offense with his head and defense, you know, he can be as useful. So I kind of agree with you, Phil. We broke down the goals. People can go back and watch the highlights of that Costa Rica game, and they could tell us. I mean, do you think Cascante, with his skill set, how you see him with Austin FC, you think he could have affected the last 2 goals, the 2 and 3? I don't think so. So could Julio have changed the game? Maybe on that second one, but, you know, very, very similar mistakes we've seen Cascante make with Austin FC. So it is what it is. Now, let's see. Gentlemen, any more things we can add on to the international call-up section for the Austin FC players before we get into the roster moves?
No, I just want the playoffs to start again. It's tired of the international break.
Well, I know, right? Neff, you're good, brother.
Yeah, no, just on the Navas note, he is injured. So.
Oh, okay, that's why.
Yeah, he wasn't even on the roster, so yeah.
Hopefully Navas gets well soon. Now, boys, gentlemen, let's get into the roster moves. 2024 roster moves have officially been announced. The decisions ahead of the season, and this is what they are. Austin FC announced today. Well, this is from the press release. I'm sorry. I always
forget to say this.
Austin FC announced on Friday the club's decision of the 2024 contract options of several players, placing the current Austin FC roster for next season at 20 contracted players. Now, the options exercised for 2024 are as follows. We had Damian Laws, Danny Pereira, Alex Ring. Important note here on Alex Ring. He was automatically renewed after he met certain benchmarks. So very interesting there. We're going to talk about that here in a bit. The options declined. Urruti, Redes, Lundqvist, Memo Rodriguez, Will Bruin, Keller. Bit of a surprise there for some. Sophie Jafal, Ocampo Chavez, a.k.a. AOC, and Charlie Asensio, the Fcito duo there. The players that remain on loan. Romagna until December 31st. Musa Gite until June of 2024. Whose loans were expired? Well, we all know Brandon Craig is back to Philly after seeing no minutes with ATX. And who is still in talks? Well, we have Hector Jimenez, who just ain't ready to hang the boots up yet. Now, are we going to give him one more season? Maybe two more seasons? It's going to be very interesting to see what happens with Hector. His spot is interesting because he doesn't really hurt us or affect us in the cap, but you would want everybody to be ready to go at any given time. And some pushback is coming from the Austin FC fan base saying, hey, Hector really isn't ready to go for at least one full game. That's a problem there. But we're going to talk about him here in a bit. Who's still in the current roster? Who's still under contract, you might ask yourselves? Well, we have three keepers, Bersano, Las, and Stuver. Defenders, we have seven, Cascante, Gallagher, Hedges, Kolmanich, Lima, Romagna, and Weizenen. Midfielders, we have Drusy, Finley, CJ Fodry, Danny Pereira, Emiliano Rigoni, Alex Ring, Johan Valencia, and Owen Wolf. That's eight. And then our forwards, we're down to just two. Now, Phil West noted in the Verde All Day that this is probably the position of most need, since there's just two names, and one of them is on loan, Musa Gite, and Giazzi Zardis. The guaranteed compensation freed up was just over 2.3 mil. The base salary freed up, I got this from Phil West's article from the Verde All Day Substack, was just over 2.1 mil. And the roster spots opened up. I might need a bit of help on this one from my calculations. I could be wrong. I've been wrong before. But if I'm not mistaken, we freed up an international spot with Sofiane Jafal. He occupied one of those. Supplemental roster spots because of Keller, Asensio, and AOC, right? And U22 Young DP with Rodney Redes, if I'm not mistaken. And around five senior spots with Maxi, Memo, and those bigger names. So I don't know. People can correct me if I'm wrong. But starting off with you, Phil, I mean, just real quick in general, are you surprised with any of these decisions? Or really is it just like, oh, well, saw that coming?
Most of it I saw coming, yeah. So there were a couple of surprises. I thought Keller, as a GA player who started in 22, I thought he had a third year in 24. So I was a little surprised that he's gone now. Ring, I was surprised to learn that there was a automatic benchmark triggered contract extension, or the option year was triggered based on that. I mean, again, typically those are club options. So the only way that you can really get kind of player impact is if you negotiate something like hitting benchmarks and having that automatically renewed into your contract. So I think that's interesting. Again, like I said in my article, I don't know that that necessarily means that Ring is going to stay the whole year or even be her opening day. It just basically means that Austin FC has that option triggered automatically. So they still retain his rights. They still, you know, are on the hook for paying him that money. Again, whether he stays at a DP or whether he can change to a Max TAM player, I think that's a possibility. That's something that I'm going to try to dig into a little bit more, because I'm kind of curious about that. And Memo, I thought, was somebody that they would have retained just because he can play a few different positions. He's versatile. You know, he's not somebody who's going to be an everyday starter, obviously, but you need depth. You need to fill out a roster. I thought, you know, at 180,000 last year is his base salary, that seemed like a good number. That seemed a club friendly number, but apparently he didn't rate. So this is very reminiscent of what Houston did at the end of last year, where they freed up 17 roster spots in total and brought in completely new players and had like a whole kind of shift in terms of what they wanted to do. Of course, they did bring a new coach in as well. So something that Austin said that they are not planning to do. So as many of you know, so not many changes, you know, on that front, obviously. But I do think, yeah, I do think there's going to be a lot of roster turnaround. And I would expect them to maybe try to move more players. I would expect them to try to make those two loans permanent if they can. You mentioned Romagna might be back here in a few weeks to train or whatever. But yeah, I would not expect him or GTA to ever, you know, feature for Austin again. I would not expect them to be in games. I don't think that's going to be in the cards necessarily. I mean, Wolf has made pretty clear you know, kind of how he feels, especially about Romagna. So
yeah, for sure.
But a lot of, I mean, I expected a lot of those players wouldn't get activated. Okay. Again, I thought the roster, you know, would shift significantly, and that's bearing out.
Now, before we get into some of the questions that I have for the pundits here tonight, Phil West, the prestigious Phil West, and obviously the incredible Neftali Ochoa, I have one thing that I do have to point out, and y'all can react to this. It says here, important to note, we can bring back any of the options not picked up, but my question for you guys is, do we see us bringing anybody back? Now, the only one, and I said this earlier, the only one that I could maybe see Austin FC bring him back, just because Phil West mentioned it earlier about the contributions he could bring to the team, is maybe Memo. Maybe Memo. He doesn't really make much. I honestly thought he was going to stay. He was involved with the Diego Fagundes trade. But Phil, I'm going to start off with you, and then I'll get Neff's take. I mean, is there anybody from that list of names that were cut or options not picked up that you would see Austin bring him back maybe?
I mean, they would probably have to pay Memo a little bit more. So we don't know what the contract looked like next year. Maybe he was going to be on more money next year and it was prohibitive, but I could see, you know, I could see another team in MLS giving him, you know, 250 maybe for what he can do. So I wouldn't be surprised if they miss out on that opportunity, that they could kind of get it to a bidding war, as it were. You know, it would be a small bidding war, but I think it would be that. And I think maybe there would be another team that would be willing to do a little bit more. I mean, I think they would have locked him up with an option year had they had the opportunity, again, unless the number was weirdly spiking for some reason. I mean, maybe maybe they would negotiate Lundqvist on a lower rate if they needed fullback depth, but I feel like they're also going to kind of go maybe a different direction on that. I mean, I do think they are going to shift some there. I think most of these players are, they've decided and they've moved on and they're gone. I wouldn't expect to see any of them back.
Definitely. Now, for the fans out there, you know, you don't want to say goodbye to the players until they do that typical Instagram post. Thank you to the city. Thank you to the fans. I'm going to always remember you, you know. So we see Maxi post that, we saw Sophie post that, David Rodriguez post that. So none of the names so far, I guess, maybe from the list, have posted anything on their social media. So I guess until now, you know, some people used to say until the fat lady sings. Well, maybe a new saying should be until the player posts on social media until you could say goodbye to some of these guys. And if is there anybody that you think or thought that maybe Austin FC would have kept, anybody that's worth bringing back?
The only one from that list that would even entertain bringing back would be Jafal. And that's because I do personally believe he has talent to be in that midfield.
In a perfect world, mate, in a perfect world, I would bring him back too.
Yeah.
But you know that there was a fallout there. There has been rumors that there was a bit of a fallout
between
player and coach.
And in a perfect world, we would not have that coach.
Okay.
In my opinion.
All right. That's fair. If I'm gonna bring this card out, you're gonna bring that card out. All right, cool.
Well, you know, right. if when and what, you know.
Okay. Any love for Keller? Some fans were also left a bit of shocked.
You know, I would say that, honestly, it's just I'm not surprised, but I'm more so surprised that we didn't really see any like real growth to him. I mean, from season one, we didn't see too much. And then the little bit that we saw on season two, of course, what happened from day one. But even at FC, I don't think we saw any substantial growth in him as a player.
Kip season two, our season three, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I think he definitely will benefit from a fresh air. I think he, under a different staff, under a different project, I think he will benefit greatly from it. I think by all means, he can definitely be
big
a
reset.
Great player. I just don't think.
Big
yeah,
reset.
I just don't think Austin FC was the club for him.
Honestly, yeah, mate, ever since. Go ahead, Phil.
I was just going to say, I think he regressed actually this year. Like, I think he showed more promise in year one.
Absolutely.
I mean, Wolf to be talking still about the emotional toll that the mishaps in St. Louis took. For him to still be affected that far down the road is really frightening. I mean, we kind of saw that with Philip Mianka too, right? So not the mistakes part, but the, you know, here's your kind of you know, standout number one super pick draft. He doesn't necessarily fare well. And now he's at, you know, Mayaka and Keller are both kind of at this MLS Next Pro to USL level. So maybe we need to reevaluate who the real number ones are in those drafts. But in some cases, yeah, I mean, it just doesn't happen. I mean, I think Keller will, you know, get to a USL championship team. And I think he'll, if he's going to develop, if he's going to grow into an MLS player, again, it's going to have to happen at that level. But I just don't think, based on what we saw from him this year, I mean, clearly from the opener, but even later on, he just doesn't seem ready with the pace of MLS. He just doesn't seem to be able to defend against these quality players consistently.
That's a good take. I mean, everything after that St. Louis game that night here in Austin, Texas, the freaking home opener, I mean, ever since that moment, it feels like, just like you said, Phil West, it's just been like a regression for Kip Keller. So we'll see what happens to him in the near future. And it is what it is, mate. What was that, Neff?
It was just the career changing.
Career changing, yeah. All right, boys. Now, I have some questions here for you guys. So let's see what kind of answers you give me. Now, these were made by me. So if they're bad questions, be nice, but they're actually pretty good questions. I'm not gonna lie. So the first one is obviously has to do with Alex Ring. Now I'm gonna start off with my G Phil West. It says, this is how the question goes. It says, what are your thoughts on Alex Ring being brought back, automatically brought back by meeting a certain benchmark? He's still a half DP on our roster. Phil, your answer to that question, mate. What are your thoughts on Ring being brought back?
Okay, so first of all, I have a question about your questions. Were these written on a napkin in the Q2 suite on Thursday night, or did you prepare these later?
These were prepared later. These were prepared later. I was too busy eating pieces of water.
Oh yeah, duh. I mean, the stuff came out on Friday. Now I'm just giving you a hard time.
You're good.
So I think, I mean, I wrote about this a little bit in my article yesterday, Saturday, for those of you listening, about just what the state of the roster is now. And I could see the club still trying to deal him. Cause I mean, again, what happened in 23 seemed like it was, is pretty weird. And again, if he hit these benchmarks automatically, you know, if the club had its druthers, if he had his druthers, they might not necessarily have wanted that option year to be activated, but it's there now. So they have to do something. So I could still see, again, like people have pointed out, well, he's going to make way more money in Austin than he wouldn't for a Finnish team. But you know, he's played in the Bundesliga before. He spent most of his life in Germany, actually. So I could see him, you know, his family moving to Finland. He plays in Germany, finds a Bundesliga team. He could probably be on equivalent money and he would be able to, you know, be a lot closer to home. And that might be kind of a good transitional place for him at this stage in his career. I mean, he's not going to necessarily have the same impact that he did back then. And, you know, arguably he was, you know, a significantly better MLS player than he was when he was in the Bundesliga. But I also think that there's possibilities for him to, you know, now with the kind of seasoning that he has and the kind of veteran experience that he has, you know, I think he could serve a team there. I mean, that said, I think he still could be a useful Austin player in 24, especially if he's not occupying a DP spot. If he's, you know, a Max Tam player, he can still do a lot of different things. Obviously, he can fill in at center back if that's needed. That's not ideal, but and he can, you know, he can play throughout the midfield again, like kind of what he wants to do versus what Wolf wants him to do. Those might be two different things, but he certainly still has some things to give. It's just a matter of, does he really want to be here? Does the club really still want him here? Or are they just kind of stuck with each other because of this thing that was in the contract? Because the language in the press release too, I mean, it was almost kind of passive. I mean, it was just kind of like, yeah, this thing happened and Ring is now here. It wasn't, you know,
it was almost like, hey, Ring is staying, but not because we wanted to. Ring is staying because he met certain things in his contract.
Yeah, he met a benchmark. And it probably has to do with minutes. Like I asked the club on Friday afternoon. I was like, well, can you say what those benchmarks are? And of course they could not. So
Okay.
Yeah, so they don't typically give a lot of contract deals details just beyond however many years they're on and if there's option years and things like that. And even with a few of them early on, we didn't know. That's why we didn't know Redis was on a 3-year deal until, you know, obviously Friday when the news came that he was gone and we were able to do the math. So, but yeah, I think, I mean, yeah, again, if Ring's here next year, he could still do some things, make some contributions. I kind of don't expect him to be, though. We'll see.
Okay. Now, this one kind of ties in with this question a little bit, and if I want to get your take on this, this is about Ronnie Redes, who was just mentioned by Phil right now. It says, with Redes being out of the team, what should ATX do with that U22 spot? Buy down Ring and get a full third DP spot, maybe? But Redes, finally out. Phil West said that, you know, we didn't really know what was his contract situation. There was rumors of him, you know, being out. Weird Austin TV did put out a tweet a while back saying, oh, Redes is gone. There's a team that's right around the corner for him. And that was not the case. He never left. He was still here. And, you know, we had a second whack at it. And this time, Redes did finally leave the club. But, Neff, what should Austin FC do with this spot? I mean, should they go out for another U22? Or do you think they should, you know, look into, you know, doing some work with Ring and going after that full third DP?
So, let's be clear on the question is, what should they do or what I think they're going to do?
What do you think they're going to do?
I think they're not going to do anything with that.
You think they're going to save it in their back pocket?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a smart thing to do. I mean, we've heard Rodo in these press conferences, and I think it seems very clear that he's not looking at in the MLS market for these type of players, right? And it's really hard to get these type of players in a January transfer window. It's just almost non-existent. Now, in my point of view, they should really go out for a full all-out DP in the summer. If that's, you know, depending of course on Ring situation as well. Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, I think that's probably the biggest surprise next to them actually considering having given another year to Jimenez.
It's a good shout. It's a good shout,
but,
for sure.
But depending on that situation, I mean, one out of the two that needed to be gone for reimagining of our DP spots, well, it's already out. And in another year, Ring will be out. So how much they want to wait on that, I don't know. But this transfer window, I would not expect much, especially now that we're saving. Okay. We're saving up.
Saving up for sure. This window, I think what a lot of people, some fans have already realized it and they've processed it. But maybe some fans haven't really came to conclusion with the idea that this window is not going to be crazy. You know, Rodo has been saying some things. He has said, oh, names you would never believe want to play for Austin. But, you know, Neff and Phil have talked about how that summer window coming up in 2024 is going to be more maybe crazy. Yeah, I guess you could say, or big in spending, or for the Austin FC fan base. This window is going to feel more like cutting the dead weight. No disrespect to players out there, cutting some bad contracts or whatever, and really just saving up for those names you wouldn't believe. Go ahead, Nev.
I would say it'd be more MLS heavy, okay. If anything.
Because for sure.
And Phil, you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I feel like the January window is more for MLS teams to move players within the league rather than in any other time of the year.
I think that's a good shout. And I think there's maybe kind of a one team's trash is another team's treasure kind that's of phenomenon, true. Right? So there might be players that don't necessarily fit in one system that you know, an Austin would be willing to pick up, right? Where they figure out.
Diego's a big example.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think there's a couple of different things here. I mean, so yeah, I mean, I think that they still probably, like you're saying, with the summer window, they still probably want to keep a DP spot open. Again, with the U22 stuff, I mean, if they keep things the way they are now, they can have three, so they can pick up another U22 if they found someone that was promising, if they wanted to go that route still. You know, again, we don't know if they're going to try to move Ragone or if that's going to be a possibility. You know, if that happens in the offseason, then obviously that frees up a full DP spot. You know, you can change Ring's status from, you know, DP to non-DP, and then you would be able to, you'd have to figure out, at that point, you could only have one U22 initiative player. So either you have to make Gite permanent out of the club, you know, find someone to buy his rights outright, or you would have to figure out something with Kolmanich, right? So, and again, we don't know when he's going to be back from his knee injury or how he is there. So he's going to obviously be much harder to deal just because he is such an unknown quantity right now. We don't know what kind of Kolmanich we're going to get when he comes back from injury.
Now, don't make fun of me, guys. I am trying to be a little bit more of an MLS nerd, but I have the MLS roster rules printed out. It's like 30 pages. Maybe
oh,
I
yeah.
shouldn't
Good
have
for
done
you.
that.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. That's,
Maybe
yeah.
I shouldn't have done that to my printer. I also have one for Neff. I need to give it to him. I forgot to give it to you Friday, buddy.
Waiting
sorry.
For my copy, dude.
I'm sorry. I have it here. I have two copies. I dead ass have two copies of the MLS roster rules. I'm sorry. But here in the young designated player spot, it says, just real quick, I'm going to read this paragraph. It says, a designated player who is 23 years old or younger at the age of 23 during the league year will carry the following young designated player salary budget charge. That we already know. We don't need to know that. Each club will be allotted two designated player roster slots. Clubs with – no, we don't need to know that. It's a lot of words, to say the least.
Right, and young DP is different from U22 initiative as well. So.
You're right. You're right.
I yeah, so there could be, like, I think Almada, for example, was categorized as a young designated player. And that brings kind of its own roster tweaks as well. So, I mean, that's definitely a route that they could go if they could find a player like that. But that's the thing. I mean, like a U22 or young designated player, it's going to be more of a risk, right? It's more of an unknown quantity. I mean, I think if we learned anything from Rodney Redis, you know, it's first of all that position can be extremely risky and how players look, you know, in a COVID year on film from the Paraguayan league might be a lot different from how they actually manifest when they get onto an MLS field. Also, this is probably an indication that Austin should probably not have any more dealings with Diego Cerati again, since none of his players really worked out.
So I think this is probably the most important piece of information here. This is just the U22 initiative roster slot. Some points here. I'll read these three and then we'll move on to the next question. It says, if the third designated player is a young designated player, the club will have all three U22 initiative slots. So we could benefit there. The other bullet point, it says, if the third designated player is age 24 or older, yet is at or below maximum target allocated money, which is the famous TAM, money amount, which is 1.6, the club will have all three U22 initiative slots. Then the last bullet point says, if the third designated player is age 24 or older and is above maximum targeted allocation money amount, 1.6, the club will have one U22 initiative slot. So we can't go after a DP older than 24. That's what that means, right, Phil?
Well, what it means is you have to have, like, that's what Ring does. Like, with Ring being the third DP on that salary level, we can do the three U22s.
Okay.
But if you got rid of Ring or you changed his designation and you had a DP that was over 24 that was making more, like if, you know, Dennis Bwanga magically appeared, right? And you could have him and you have Ring as your max TAM non-DP player, then you would have to only have one U22 on the roster. So you would have to, at that point, given where things are now, choose between Gita and Kolmanich. And it seems like you would want to probably keep Kolmanich and see what he's going to be like. So you have to find a home for Gita, which has been challenging, right? He's only been able to get loans. He hasn't been able to get a deal outright. And again, that loan expires, you know, at the end of June 24. So they have some time still, but probably something that they want to resolve sooner rather than later, because it doesn't seem like he's going to be back and frankly shouldn't be. And I know a lot of people are like, oh, we should bring GT back. He's an under 30 striker. There's a lot of under 30 strikers in the world. It doesn't necessarily need to be just him.
That's a good point. Now, to close out the Rotten Redis question, I think that's one of the most interesting decisions or the interesting moves, because that opens like a can of worms. You know, so many things we could do because of Rotten Redis being moved out or whatever. That spot is very important. So people don't realize how important those U22 spots are, and they actually really are. But all right, guys. Now this one is a bit of a T-ball question. That's why I put it in here. And I'll get Neff's take on this one first, then we'll get my G Phil. Neff, what is the biggest need in the team after the decisions were announced? Now that's a bit of a no-brainer. Let's see what you got.
It's not one, it's multiple, but the first one is identity. This team needs a project. It needs it's building from the ground up, dude. We've shown that the last season was horrendous. I mean, this team to me does not show a precise project at the moment. Okay. And Rodo might be, you know, that change, right? So but I'm gonna start judging that from next season on. I at the moment I don't see a project,
so especially not a player. identity is what you're saying.
Not a player. We need 23 more player. 23 or a different position. Players.
No. Okay. Well, yeah, but that's what I mean. You're choosing identity over a position for this team. That's pretty deep.
I think we need to cover our bases first, and as a club, and then you can go do that. Of course, you know, we're stating the obvious. Of course, we need players. The squad as right now is pretty short, but we need that as a club. We need that, and I mean, of course, we need strikers. We're probably, I would go another as well, maybe another midfielder, and yeah, we have the budget, a well seasoned center back, because God knows we need it.
Good takes. I mean, those are definitely good shouts. Now let's
see. Are you saying that Nap, are you saying that Austin had an identity in 22 and then lost it in 23? Are you saying that Austin's never had an identity and needs one?
I think and I've mentioned it plenty of times before, I think the team started with the wrong foot from season one. I mean, I guess what's the right way to put it? I think we started building the roster on with the wrong foot. It wasn't the right fit for what the identity was supposed to be. The idea of what Wolf wants to play with the players that we brought in, I don't think necessarily fit that. And I also don't know that it's what works in MLS, right? Because it's quite authentic what we see here in Austin compared to other MLS teams. I don't see other MLS teams necessarily playing the way Austin does. We're trying to force that idea down on the players as much as Austin does. So I think if we're going to go then that way with Wolf's identity, because obviously that's the way we're going to go, then I think we definitely need to see different types of players.
I do want to push back on that, Nif. I do want to push back on that a little bit, if I can, because you did have a good point there at the end with the players brought in not fitting Wolf's philosophy or Wolf's ball philosophy. But if we go back to season two, we had 10 goals in the first two games. In a perfect world, I know I always say this, playing devil's advocate, if Cecilio never did the things that he did in his public life with his partner, he would still be here at Austin FC. And some fans, there is a corner of Austin FC fans that say that this team would have been way better. We could have maybe at least competed more in the Western Conference Finals with Cecilio Dominguez on this team. So if it wasn't for some things happening, we also had Ruben Gabrielsen's thing happen, which saw him leave on a free, which completely handicapped us in the defense. I mean, I think we've had good pieces. We just had bad luck some of the time.
You know, that's a fair shout. That's a fair shout, and I can't dismiss it, because season two, and like I said, I mentioned it to you as well, to me it's more of a mirage than and a clear overachievement.
Okay, Rodo. Okay, Rodo.
No, I mean, you just got to look at it the way it is. I mean, the first half of that season, we did amazing, and then up until the point where the summer gets here, we start getting into very rough patches. We get into playoff start, and then we struggle against in our first playoff game, and then we do great against Dallas. We get to conference final, and we bust there. But everybody seems to only really think about season two from the first half of it. Let's not forget that we had getting into the playoff run. It was very, very patchy, to say the
least. It was choppy at the end. I agree. Now, I just mean, to close out on the topic, go ahead, Phil.
Oh yeah, I was gonna say, so I mean, I I'll get to kind of who I think we need in a second here, but I want to hit on this point first, because I think it's a really interesting discussion about this of idea of, does Austin FC have identity? And I mean, I think they do, but I think they were, like you were saying, Nath, they were really imperfectly built in the first year. And I think they rectified that to a certain degree in year two. And I think, you know, in particular, having Driussi with a full off season and just having the team learning things a little bit better and having things maybe a little bit simplified from where it was year one allowed them to flourish in a lot of year two. But yeah, I do think that they got found out a little bit. And you saw them peak with that LAFC win in August that, you know, we all will remember forever probably. But then they struggled after that. I think teams kind of found them out a little bit more. And I think they still tried to play with a lot of the same philosophy in year three, but I think they also changed things around and the changes that they made just didn't work and didn't take. And then they had a bunch of injuries and had to change people around fundamentally at positions. You know, you, the plan was probably not to have, you know, Ring be a center back for a lot of the season, for example.
Yeah.
And I think, I think if they want to play the way that Wolf wants them to play, and Roto seems to be in line with kind of that idea of still being very possession heavy, of having like very kind of fluid defense to offense, I think you need another really good fullback to complement Gallagher, which I think is why the Lima trade might be happening. I mean, like, I think Lima is functional and good, and there's a lot of things that you would want an MLS lifer to do, but I think they're probably looking for something a little bit more dynamic. I think they need a prime age striker that can create his own shot and put some pressure off Driussi, right? Allow Driussi to be able to kind of float a little bit more. I mean, you saw Maxi being a lot more effective in 22 than in 23. I mean, it wasn't probably the perfect fit, but what he was doing was allowing Driussi kind of a lot more freedom and creativity. And then Fagundes was a lot more effective with his assists and all that too. So, you know, I think that you would probably either want to see Ragone step up, or you'd want to get a winger who's also really pretty good and dynamic. And then, yeah, you have center back depth, but they're not particularly, you know, fast and agile center backs. So I think you need to maybe develop some kind of younger players who can step into those roles in a couple of years. So there's a lot of work to do. I mean, I think striker is number one right now, just because obviously having the, you know, the over 30 by committee club, it did not work well. And I think we're stuck with Zardes. Zardes is, you know, a great consummate locker room guy, and I think still can score in this league. You know, his numbers are still pretty on par with what he's done the last few years, but you look at the eye test and you look at, you know, just his, you know, the last goal of the season was Chiellini beating Zardes to a ball and getting an own goal give you an indication of kind of where he might be in terms of his speed. I mean, I think he's just lost a step. I mean, it feels like he's aged several years in a year. I mean, he had that injury last year, you know, with Colorado and Columbus when he was in that year. And he, you know, he still got to double digit goals, but he's nowhere near close to that production right now. 100%. Still good on the per 90 numbers, but need some durability as well. And if you have him as a backup striker, maybe that's a better role for him, you know, maybe to be kind of more of a mentor to somebody who is learning the league, but, you know, frankly has the legs and the speed and the site to be able to, you know, score double digit goals. His team definitely needs that.
I'll tell you what, that's an expensive backup striker, Phil. But hey.
Well, yeah, I know. That's part of the roster build. That's part of, you know, kind of the curse of Claudio Reyna, as it were, right? or the curse of, you know, Josh Wolf and Sean Rubio tag teaming on sporting director, right? So whoever made those decisions, I mean, they're tough. I mean,
tough.
Hedges is making a lot of money, Zardes is making a lot of money. You know, there are still some contracts where production versus paying are still not great, but you know, again, I think moving a routine particular was a move in that direction to try to maybe kind of course correct in terms of what they're paying players, you know. And you still have Pereira, whose value, you still have Wolf, whose value, you know, there are still some value players on this team.
Perfect transition, because Danny is actually in the next question that I'm about to ask you. And by the way, real quick note, Claudio Reyna was at Q2 Stadium for the USA game, so he was in presence. I saw him congratulate Gio Reyna after Gio Reyna came out and signed a bunch of autographs for some young fans right by the field level. So shout out to Gio Reyna, and some other U.S. players came out and they signed autographs. But I did see Claudio Reyna at Q2 Stadium confirmed. Didn't take a picture, didn't need to, but I visually confirmed.
Was Reyna he at the box
at
too?
Q2 Stadium. No. He was not. He was not at there.
Different.
He was in a suite, but not your suite, probably.
Of course. He was in a suite. Just not our suite. I don't think I could say it was my suite anyways.
But that must have been weird, by the way, for him to come back for him.
Very. I was like, hey, Claudio, what's up? Welcome back. How you doing? Right. But all right, boys. Moving on to one of the next questions I have here. Now, this one might be a little bit of an emotional answer for some Austin FC fans if they're following along with the questions and they themselves answering them in their head while they're listening back to this podcast. And the question is, Danny and Damian's options were picked up, but they make very little for the kind of talent that they possess. What is a good solution for everyone here? Is there even one? Or will it end with one or both players pushing for a move or alone outside the club looking for more money on their salary sheet. Starting off with you, my GNF, Damien won't want to be number two for long after winning goalkeeper of the year in the next pro league, or should he? Should he be happy with that role as a goalkeeper in Austin FC? And Danny, 100% should want more money. He is playing more than what he gets paid to do. Now, Nev, I want to ask you: do you agree with those two statements that I said there? Does Danny deserve more money than what he's currently getting? And do you think Damien is going to be content with that role of being number two behind Stuva for Austin FC?
I can't speak for Damien, but I think Damien would be okay with another year under Stewart, just, you know, for the learning experience, because quite frankly, any goalkeeper
can learn. Making 67,000, mate.
And yes, he deserves more. I mean, that's a fair show, but those are two separate things. I mean, as 67? A young goalkeeper, I'm saying he deserves more. I'm not saying.
Mate, I know Whole Foods executives making more money than this talented young player, bro.
Hernan, you make more than that. It's okay.
No, I don't. Quit the rubbish.
Oh, come on. You're in the suite with all these famous people, dude. Answer the question. We know you. We know where you're at.
Answer the question.
The short answer is no. Damien should not just be complacent with that, but you know he should go. If he can get another contract, that he could be number one somewhere, which I think he shouldn't want to leave unless he's guaranteed that. Then yeah, he should go out there and get it. And same thing with Danny. Danny's a little different. I think Danny should look for his exit. Honestly, he's 23 now. If he wants to make that kind of European jump, it has to be very, very soon.
Now or never type stuff. Course, now or never.
I would say this window or next, because it's and especially now. I mean, he got Copa America coming up for him, and I mean. I don't like to get too much into the money talk, because that's not my contract. I'm not saying it's not what I'm making, but I will say that a player like Danny, on the wages that he's on, Austin FC has a steal in their book. Like, there is no other way to say it. Right. I mean, do you value a player like that?
Go ahead, Phil.
I mean, I would say that first of all, yeah, for Loss and Pereira, for their development, I mean, they might be better served other places. So that's part of what they would need to express to the club, obviously, if they want exits, if they want to get out, right? So, I mean, the club, obviously, they've got two great young players that they're not paying very much money for. So obviously, that's good, right? So in terms of trying to maximize the value of the roster, right? So it might feel a little exploitive, but at the same time, that's why you take a risk on, for example, Pereira's case, a GA player that you get through the super draft, right? So, he could have flamed out like Keller, right? Or Mayaka, but he's... Mm-hmm. He's great and he's developing and he's getting better. Pereira, I think, has to decide, can I make it in Europe or do I want to be an MLS lifer? There's an opportunity for him. I think he's trying to negotiate stuff with the club right now, is what we're hearing, in terms of like what his next deal might be. So, if he does decide to go with the club, maybe he can make, kind of a higher tier level lockup for another few years and then go for a next big contract, whether it's Austin or elsewhere. But if he does, obviously, if he does go to Europe and there's a transfer fee, it's going to be probably a significant transfer fee. And Austin should theoretically be able to parlay that into getting other good young players. And that would be good. And I think with Loss, it's the same sort of deal, right? Like he could function and get more starts as a number two next year. And that would probably serve him. But would that serve him best? And would that also, serve the club best to do that? I mean, it's great because then you don't have to worry about they're set at goalkeeper, right? So you have Bassano if you need him. You have Loss as a really reliable, good young number two. You have Stuver as one of the, I would say, the better, 7-8 goalkeepers in the league, as your number one. Like, that's a great place to be. Goalkeeper is important, obviously. But you could probably, like a team like a Portland or a Houston right now that might want an upgraded goalkeeper, you could probably get, I'm just going to throw out a number here, like maybe 800,000 in GAM. you know, for a player like that. And then you could turn around and you could make some moves in the league for that. And then Loss wouldn't be with the club anymore, but he would be, you know, he's this asset that you've developed through Verdos. You've moved him to another team. You know, like, you know, he was goalkeeper of the year last year. And like Schulte was goalkeeper of the year in 22 for Columbus. And now he's Columbus's number one. You know, they had a little bit more with the whole Eli Room situation. They had a little bit more need for getting him up to that level. They weren't as set as Austin is, having Stuver's their number one. And Schulte's been good. I mean, they're in, you know, they're in the playoffs still. He's, you know, by the numbers, he's not one of the maybe better goalkeepers in the league. He's kind of like in that middle third. But certainly with the team that they have, it's a strong team and he's done well. So Losk certainly could, I think, if you compare him to Schulte, I think he could function as an LMS goalkeeper next year. You know, I think you could definitely have him on a team and he could be a number one and do well. But does he want to do that? Or does, I mean, he's talked about wanting to go to Europe too. So is he better served being here and then moving to Europe next year when he's shown a little bit more, or is it better for him to be with an MLS team next year?
Exactly.
If not Austin, just to get more minutes.
And that's why I said it would be a little bit of an emotional answer for some Austin FC fans, because you know, they are talented players. They're great guys, but sometimes you're tied into these rookie contracts, these, you know, starting out contracts, and you know you're gonna have to, I mean, Loss is not a rookie, you know what I'm saying, but he is on a rookie wage, you know what I'm saying, kind of thing. He's tied into that. Good things are coming for people like Loss and Danny Pereira with the talent that they have, the players that they are. So I guess as Austin FC fans, we just want to see these guys, you know, leave with some type of gam left behind for us, right? Something like that. So
yeah, like when, you know, for example, like when Almiron left Atlanta, right? So that was a lot of transfer money. That was good for the club. That was good for his development. You know, and the fans, I think, were kind of, you know, don't cry because it's over, smile because it happened, right? Exactly. I think it would be kind of the same thing with Loss and Pereira.
Exactly. Now, all right, boys, we have a couple more questions, a couple more minutes tonight on the Top Flight Pod. Now, this one is about the striker position. Now, we need a striker, no doubt. The question is, should we be looking at Valentin Noel or Sebastian Pinot as possible short-term solutions while we wait for the rumor to be big and spending summer window? Rigoni has also slotted in that nine position and he can be a help as well. What are y'all's thoughts? You know, Phil has mentioned how people are saying we need to bring Musa back because he's under 30. Well, there's a lot of people out there. So I guess we'll start off with you, mind you, Phil. We'll give you the first shot on this one. I mean, could Noel and Pinot be short-term solutions for that nine position?
They could, but I don't know if they would necessarily be the best. And I really want to know Neff's answer because the face he's making right now is pretty priceless. I mean, I think, yeah, I mean, this is where, again, the kind of let Roto cook thing, this is where he needs to do that, right? So I think you do know what you have in-house, but I think even as kind of a short-term solution, I don't know that necessarily those players are going to be better than somebody that you could get in the off season that gets jettisoned from another MLS team. Like even, I mean, I don't think they would do this and it's probably not a good idea, but I think like Kai Kamara is going to be available. And, you know, I think he would have been really useful in 21. I don't necessarily think that he would be the right answer now, but there are going to be strikers that are out there. I mean, that's, you know, that's, they picked up Bruin last year, kind of essentially, you know, on the cheap from another team. I don't think that's ideal, but if you have that as your third striker and you have really good production out of your first two strikers, then that's okay, right? So, and Bruin still picked up, you know, a few goals. It's just that they didn't really have much production out of their top two strikers. And so when you have a third that's added to the mix like that, then obviously it doesn't look as good.
Okay, fair enough. Neff, you're making a face, brother. Give us your answer, bro.
Dude, Noel at the nine. Against MLS opposition? I don't think so.
No, I mean,
I
get the answer, but you also have to get the question. You also have to get the question. The reason why I mentioned Noel and Pinot
would be, I think cheap Pinot solutions. Would be great.
They're cheap solutions is why.
Look, if you were letting Rodo cook, but I understand that we're going to be eating ramen for a while. We're eating instant noodles for a couple years.
A couple years? That's
okay. Hey, that's what he said. He said 2-3 years of run. You're gonna get your steak someday.
Well, I think I kind of think in a best case scenario, and I said this in my article too, from Saturday, You know, I think you can have like what you're seeing with Atlanta and Houston this year, right? So, I mean, Houston had a really dramatic upgrade. And in part, I think, you know, Herrera being a whole different player, you know, the player they expected him to be when they signed him as a DP, you know, he had a much better 23 than 22, obviously. But you look at Atlanta, for example, like they're not done with their work yet. Like there's still transitional stuff they need to do. But what they did is they got rid of a bunch of bad contracts. They brought in some difference makers. You know, they brought in, you know, Giakoumakis in particular, 17 goals, you know, MLS newcomer of the year. I mean, obviously huge difference maker, right? So, I mean, you know, if you have that kind of shift, you know, they have a central midfielder who's really good, whose name I'm blanking on. I think it's Tristan. I'll get this. Hold on. They made some upgrades. Tristan Mbeumba. That's right. Yeah. Okay. So they brought him in. He seems to have transformed things. I mean, obviously, they still need to figure out what they're going to do with Miles Robinson, who wants DP money, and they don't maybe want to spend that on a center back. You know, Brad Guzan is 65 years old. So they probably need to do something there, and they haven't really been able to find like a goalkeeper solution there. So, that's maybe facts. An interesting facts. Damien Loss destination. But they still have work to do, but they're evolving into a team that actually made the playoffs. And then, of course, Houston's having a really good run. They're still in the mix. I don't necessarily know that they're going to get to MLS Cup, but they could, you know, especially with the West being so weird. I mean, you know,
I agree.
We would all hate to see that. I mean, you know, from a soccer standpoint, it'd be great. From like, you know, an Austin fan standpoint, you know, completely terrible, but totally could happen.
Totally can. Now, just real quick to just mention Pinot and Noel, kind of going back to Neff's answer. Noel, for sure, Neff at the nine, pairing him up with against MLS center backs for sure would be tough. Maybe at the cam of creative midfielder world, whatever, right? I would entertain Pinot to be brought up to the first team. We've seen a young talent be tried out in leagues all over the world. I mean, Barcelona's going around with like a 16-17 year old kid. I'm not comparing them to, but I'm just saying, like, we need to give chance to our youth is what I mean. We have strikers that are over 30 years old, and we have some cats that are very young that are coming up from the FC Ito side. Valentino, well, 7 goals. Pinot, 6 goals. Different level, not the same. But give them an opportunity, especially in a time where we're in a money crunch.
Can win a job in camp, sure. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're going to win in camp, but, you know, let them go to camp. Let them compete. Let them see what they can do.
I think Pinot has the body for it, too.
Absolutely.
I think he does.
I think both of them definitely deserve a shot at the first team at the
least. For sure. But for me, Pinot is the only one that could really slot in at the nine and be a bit of a help.
Nine, absolutely.
Like,
yeah.
Some minutes.
At the nine, it's a no-brainer.
And Fodry's best is an inverted left winger. I know some people put his name around for striker. He's not a striker. No.
That's where I had him on my depth chart on the left side. That's where I had him.
Yeah,
which would be great, honestly, because he's also like physically wise. He's probably one of the FC Ito players that are actually most prepared for an MLS level.
Yeah, and he had some minutes with the Loyal, you know, in USLC. So, I mean, he's played it beyond the MLS Next Pro level already, you know. And I think he looked good in his runouts, you know.
Absolutely.
I think so. He did. He did have some moments where he did change the game. Now, gentlemen, moving on to a bit of a center back question. This is on Johan Romagna. This is the second to last question, so bear with me. It says, where does Romagna fit in this team? We got exclusive info earlier, what was it, a couple weeks ago, earlier this month, that he will be here in Austin the first week of December. What are your thoughts? Where does he fit on this team? I'll start off with you, Neff.
In the bench.
Okay, go ahead. That's it?
I mean, if you ask me, like me personally, if I was a coach, not even in my club. But like, then again, also Julio probably wouldn't be in my club.
Okay.
Yeah, on the practice squad. Yeah. He's not it. Like, I think he would have been functional and fine in some games this year had he been here. But again, you need speed at that position. You need, you know, soccer IQ at that position. I don't think he really possesses either of those things in great degrees. So, I was kind of puzzled that he came here kind of in the first place, but, you know, he was here and, you know, certainly, lovable guy and all that. But, I think he's better suited to the game in South America. I don't think he's got necessarily, you know, kind of MLS qualities for being a center back. And it obviously didn't work out in Austin. You know, Wolf obviously doesn't rate him. There were the whole, you know, it was very surprising to hear Wolf be that critical of, you know, Romagna's regimen, you know, the whole
in public,
stuff. It was one of the more surprising press conference moments of the season, I would say, when he put Romagna on blast for.
No, just I guess maybe to be devil's advocate, just to give some support to the other side of this coin. We have Phil West and we have Neff kind of saying, oh, Romagna is a bit of a practice player. There is some Austin FC fans, believe it or not, that are Romagna stands. They're saying, hey, sure, well, yeah, if he was able to handle his own in the Copa Libertadores, they knocked out Flamengo, which was the current holders. That was a bit of a surprise. They did crash out the next round to the team that, if I'm not mistaken, ended up winning the whole thing, to Fluminense. Mm-hmm. Fluminense, yes, won it with Marcelo. They knocked out Johan Romagna and Olimpia. So some fans out there are saying, like, hey, bring him back. He's able to hold his own weight in Copa Libertadores. The level is higher here than MLS. But, you know, you two guys presented some very valid arguments on Johan Romagna, how, you know, he could be out completely with the coaching staff. So we'll see just what happens to
Johan. Yeah, I think for some fans, it's kind of a devil you know thing, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, I'm advocating for Gite because I saw him play and he scored, you know, 3 goals in game once. Yeah. You know, I saw Romagna, you know, body some guys, you know, in some games. So
versus Nashville, he has that.
Yeah,
moment.
Yeah.
That one,
it's kind of a lack of imagination. I understand you might get attached to these players as fans, but at the same time, you know, if we've had enough kind of a sample size to see that these players don't really work in this system, and you have arguably, again, and we still have to see this in evidence, but you have arguably one of the most qualified soccer people in the world as your sporting director, and he hasn't really even had a full window. It's like, you know, at least let him do that and see what he comes up with.
Let him cook, Phil.
Yeah, it's all kind of coming back to that.
It's all coming back. All right, gentlemen. Now we have one last question. What was that, Nev?
Lots of ramen.
Lots of ramen.
Hey, just to add to that, I think we already have an example of a good center back that we could have had. And he already played here a couple games. He did great. And Mr. Radanovic.
Yeah.
Radovanovic?
Yeah. That's the profile of center back that we should be looking at.
His numbers were great. I mean, it's a shame that he didn't want to stay. Like, he definitely brought something to the mix and had just really outstanding underlying numbers and did it with a separated shoulder for a lot of it. Yeah, he was fantastic. Yeah. But also he was auditioning to get back to Europe, you know, and clearly, you know, that's where he and the people close to him wanted to be.
Now, to me, two things. To me, Rado used us for a better situation back home, which is, hey, you know, he came here, he did his thing, he got a better contract where he wanted to be, whatever. And number two, for me, the best center back that Austin FC has never had, never played for them. Does anybody want to solve that riddle?
Oh, yeah, Kamal Miller.
The best center back Austin FC ever legend. had never played for them.
15
Kamal
minutes.
Miller. 15 minutes, legend. But Kamal Miller, we see now the players that he's playing with, Inter Miami, Canadian center back also. Kamal Miller, I love watching him play because every time I see him, I can't help but think, oh, what could have been?
Yeah.
What could have been?
And he got traded to Montreal for what? Does anybody remember?
It was like, what was it? Some spots that we don't even have anymore?
I think it was 225 or 250,000 in GAM. And the number 11 spot in the Super Draft, which was used on a center back named Freddie Kleeman.
Freddie Kleeman got sent to the Tampa Bay Rowdies or something like that, right?
Yeah, season one. We see, circle back. It started such a left foot.
I guess Neff kind of got a little bit of points there on his point that we built it, you know, kind of the wrong way. Now, gentlemen.
Oh, my God. That expansion draft was.
Expansion. It is what it is. Now, gentlemen, the last question of the night that I have for you guys, and hopefully everybody has enjoyed the questions that I prepared for Mr. Phil West and Mr. Neff here. The last one is, now, this is a bit of a recent topic. We ran a poll on Instagram. 90% trust in Rodo and 10% said nope. Where do y'all stand on that topic? I think Neff kind of talked about it earlier. But Phil, I'm gonna start off with you, mate. 90% said yeah, I trust in Rodo, but 10% are still pushing back. Now on social media, on Twitter, King Koopa, shout out to him. He said, "Hey, you can't trust what you don't know." So should we give that 10% a little bit more credit?
Well, I mean, he got hired, you know, and other teams were looking to bring him into MLS. It wasn't just, you know, Austin found this guy and decided alone to bring him in. He was rumored to get other, you know, either coaching or sporting director jobs before he came here. And like I said on the Patreon podcast, you know, and well, and also, you know, he obviously has learned a lot between Barcelona, Liverpool, and Man City. I mean, that's, you know, you know, as Pep's main assistant, you're going to learn quite a bit. But just kind of going back to what I said on the Patreon podcast, it's like, you know, you can either, you know, trust the process and trust Roto and kind of see what happens, or you can just immediately distrust it and be a miserable fan. And at this point, you know, I don't have any reason to distrust Kim, and he seems like he's knowledgeable. I don't know how that's going to necessarily translate to MLS, but until we see it fails, you know, I don't think that we should necessarily, you know, be judging right away before we can see a body of work. I mean, you can look at Claudio Reyna and you can look at how Austin FC was built in 21 and how that carried over to 22. And you could say, yeah, he maybe wasn't as great of a sporting director as we thought he was going to be when he came from NYCFC, right? You know, you can look at, you know, the players that he brought, the aforementioned, you know, disastrous expansion draft, you know, trading, you know, Kamal Miller for effectively Freddie Kleeman and some GAM. And you can say, yeah, that's not a good body of work, but I think it's way too early. And I think that 90% trust him and they're ready to have some faith and hope and hope, you know, that next season will go better, or at least there will be some kind of change and transformation happening that'll be good to follow. I think that's good. I think that's healthy.
That's a good answer. That's a good answer. Now, Neff, there was a bit of a number change. It's not 90 to 10 anymore.
Oh, no.
89% side with Rodo, 11% say nope. Neff, the 11%, are they just hurt? Are they just scarred from what happened with Claudio Reyna, just like Phil was saying earlier? Are they just scared to trust Rodo Borrell? What do you think, mate?
I think 11% don't like instant noodles every fucking day, dude. And that's fair. I mean, I think Phil made some amazing points, and I kind of like whenever he said you could be a miserable fan, it's like, Phil, I'm a miserable fan, because I wish I could see this team. At least right now, I don't see the team going in the direction that I would love to see it in. However, I am 100% with both of you guys in the sense that it is very early. It is very early, and Rodo has to, you know, he has to get the tools that he has to get to bring these players in. I don't buy into this whole thing where he's trying to tell us, like, oh, then you wouldn't believe the names. I don't want to hear that from him. I want to see him working, and if that's going to take 2-3 years, fine. But don't try to tell me about what could be, because I already know, like, we know how these situations are. Transfer situations are very tough. Just like what Hernan noted earlier with the Reddit situation, transfer fall all the time. But what I really want to see is a solid body of work from Rodo. And I'll give him the time. I mean, what else am I going to do? I'm not just going to stop supporting Austin for that sense. But I can't be critical, and I will be very open with the fact that I don't want to wait that long. Like, it's just, I'm used to watching, like, this club right here, it's also a very young club, and this club has been through so many squad rebuilds.
Santos. Club Santos Laguna, for those of you listening.
So many rebuilds, brother.
Oh yeah, no, and I mean I totally respect that. And yeah, and I mean,
it's hard.
It is hard, and I mean, it's, you know, it's hard to be a fan and watch this. I mean, as a journalist, it's hard to cover a team when it's as bleak as it was, you know, week after week in 21 and week after week in 23. It's not fun to say, oh, it's the eighth straight game without a win. It's the ninth straight game without a win, you know, to have to keep on that storyline, like, again and again and again. Yeah. It's hard as a fan, as somebody who has a vested interest in the team. But I also think, I mean, it's, you know, and part of it is just, I think that change is scary too, right? So,
very, very.
You know, I mean, you have this wolf out movement. You have these people that, you know, definitely think that the change needs to be at coach. And I definitely see those sorts of arguments, but you kind of had similar things, you know, frustrations with coaches. Like, for example, you know, this last year in Colorado and Portland, you know, and if you said, okay, we're going to replace Robin Fraser in Colorado, we're going to replace, you know, Gio Savarese in Portland, you know, those fans might be, yes, we're ready. You know, we want to see something different. We want to see something new. And then if you told them, oh, we're going to replace Robin Fraser with Chris Armas, or we're going to replace, you know, Gio Savarese with, you know, Phil Neville, right? Neville, who dug Miami into a hole so bad that not even Messi could get them out of it. I mean, you know, how do you think those fan bases feel? I mean, we're in a much more hopeful place, I think, with a sporting director and seeing what kind of players we can get than those two teams that have just committed to those coaches that have already demonstrated that they can't really get it done in MLS consistently.
Just to counter that real quick.
Sure.
Yes, with the coach changes and the way you described it was perfect. But also, what a lot of fans are thinking about is, how much worse do you want to get in terms of numbers before any other coach is not an improvement? You know what I mean? Because in Portland's case, of course, I mean, the guy was there for a good amount of time, and he had some good numbers, if I'm not wrong.
Got them some trophies.
Mm-hmm. Some trophies, right? I don't, and of course, what he did in Miami was a different thing coming in. But he's also come to a better team, right? I want to be optimistic. Or I don't know if I'm just playing out being pessimistic and saying that another coach with maybe just a tiny little bit more of experience could adapt this team into something better. And that thing, sure, that's what the Austin FC really is asking for. Because nobody, I mean, maybe for some people it's personal with Wolf. Me personally, it's not against Wolf. I just want to see good football. And I just don't see it happening with him. Just with him. He's not the only change in this club that needs to be done. But I think that in most cases, it would be the starting point.
Yeah. I mean, given how they performed, given how the team looked, given the record, I absolutely would have understood if they decided to go in a different direction after the season. I also kind of understand the point that Roto's trying to make, but certainly, you know, there's a possibility that they don't maybe necessarily get all the players they need and they look the same coming out of the game 24. And then how many, you know, at what point did they decide to go with a new coach? And, you know, could that be out there? I mean, like the Red Bulls and, you know, Charlotte both made the playoffs. I mean, not very well or spectacularly, you know, with the expanded playoff format, but they hit that threshold, that kind of baseline threshold. And then they still decided we're going to go different directions with the coaches. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, it's certainly, I mean, that's obviously one of the main, if not the main storyline in 24, right? Like, how long is Josh Wolf going to have to turn it around? And are they going to be able to do that? Are they going to, you know, be able to remake themselves the way Houston and Atlanta did, or is it going to be more of the same? You know, are we going to see more crosses into oblivion and sad horseshoe and all the other, you know, kind of things that made us like really, really hate, you know, 21 and 23.
We might look the same going into next season, but at least we'll have a lot more money in our bank account ready to be used.
Well, until it gets spent. I mean, that's the thing. Like, you know, you know, the Fagundes trade happened, and then you gave Hedges a big salary. I mean, he commands that because he's been a center back in this league a long time, and there was definitely a need for center back. You know, Wolf said he's a target, but you know, there's the whole question of, and I think this was maybe a question you had too, about like who the opening day center back pair is going to be.
Yes, yeah, that was the question that I had for your mailbag coming up. Like, who did we think the opening
center back pair? Yeah, and I mean, it very well still could be that, you know, because Conte and Vaisanen are seen as the two best center backs, and Hedges becomes very expensive center back insurance. I mean, you need center back insurance. 23 proved that, right? So, and you know, you saw the difference between a very healthy team in 22 and what they did when they were fully functioning, and then, you know, a 23 team that had some key injuries early and then just sort of went off the rails, you know, towards the end. Yeah. I mean, it's important, but also, you know, it doesn't help them get younger. It doesn't help them get faster necessarily either.
Of course. Now, boys, we have came to the end of the pod today here on the Top Fly podcast. I appreciate you guys for being here. Now, we could go on and on and on and talk about the roster moves that have occurred in the past couple of days. But we do have to cut it here. Now, if you have any more questions, anything that we didn't answer for y'all on this pod, maybe you can add us on Twitter, keep the conversation going, or in the YouTube comments. You can follow Phil West. Phil, what's your at on Twitter for everybody here?
Oh, at Phil West.
At Phil West, okay.
Yeah, and I got my account in 2007, so
okay,
that was still available.
And then tell us about Verde All Day.
Yeah, so as a lot of you know, I was managing editor over at the Striker before that went on hiatus, and I decided to move to Substack because I know a lot of people, you know, particularly from SB Nation, who had lost their sites and their places for coverage. They moved over to Substack, and so yeah, so I'm there. It's Verde All Day. .substack.com, and I do make a point to do at least one free article every week, so you can subscribe there as a free subscriber. You can get some of the content, and then the paid content will get teased, so you'll be able to see like kind of the first part of it, and then hopefully you are enticed to become a paid subscriber if you get enough of the free stuff. But you can start at that free level, and then the paid, you get everything. And I'm even now I'm doing, you know, at least like 2-3 articles a week. I mean, during the season, you know, it can be even more than that, right? So, and again, it's just, you know, it's a lot of it's contingent on game news through the season, and once we get new player announcements, you know, some deep dives into that. But I've been doing, you know, some really kind of fun things about looking at some of the questions around next year, you know, thinking about Owen Wolf and what might happen with him. We didn't talk about him, but I think it's very similar to Pereira in terms of, you know, does he continue to develop in MLS, or does he need to go to Europe, and what can the club get if they do facilitate an overseas move? Talked about, you know, the year of 8 center backs, and looked at all the center backs and kind of their performances throughout the year. And that's where he did Radovanovic numbers and found that, wow, he was really, really good in some of his underlying numbers compared to some of the other center backs. And then, you know, kind of figured out a little bit more of the puzzle of who Julio Cascante is in that as well. So yeah, that's a thing that you can, again, you know, I try to be pretty analytical and pretty even-handed in my coverage. You know, there's other people that do things, you know, kind of up and down the spectrum. I tend to be nerdy in my approach, and
nothing wrong with that.
Also, yeah. And also, I mean, you know, the club seems to like me all right. So, you know, definitely I'm working on getting access to some people in the off season, which might provide some kind of interesting perspective. So, you know, just kind of things that I'm working on. But yeah, but it's, I mean, it's a, you know, yeah, as we've talked about before, you know, there's a really good, healthy, diverse mix of people and approaches in Austin FC media. Not every city gets that. So y'all should feel lucky. And I definitely feel, you know, lucky to be a part of that.
Okay. Well, shout out to my G Phil West for being here, giving us the time to come onto the Top Flight Pod,
sure,
and give us the knowledge and also the answers that a lot of us are looking for, especially right now in this time of need with all these roster decisions and these spots. And what are we going to do? A lot of us are running around like a chicken without a head. Well, hopefully this Top Flight Podcast episode today helped you understand a little bit of what's going on and what the club is trying to do moving forward. Now, my G Neff, real quick, where can the people find you, brother?
Well, just anybody who wants to find me on Twitter at Neftali723. Of course, I'll be there shouting at Hernan for, you know, taking my goals back when he shouldn't.
Bro, it's one goal. Maybe get over it, dude. Score two more.
That's my winning goal. Stop. No, I got you. It's on site.
All right, bro. All right. Well, next pickup. Thank you on that note. Next pickup. Not sure when it's going to be, but we'll have one soon for the Patreon members. And we might invite some of the free Warehouse TV and also Top Flight members to come kick the ball around. Maybe a bigger field, maybe a 7v7 going on, or an 11v11. We'll see what fields we can check out. But boys, thank you for being here. Shout out to Neff, shout out to Phil West, and shout out to everybody that does subscribe to the Patreon, and also everybody that keeps up with the Warehouse TV page, Top Flight. And also shout out to Verde. Verde All Day, that Substack. I'm a witness, I'm a subscriber, and I get a lot of my information from there. So be like me, check out Phil West coverage on Austin FC, and also shout out to all the Austin FC journalists that also cover this team. Everybody does a tremendous job, and 2024 just around the corner, y'all. Hopefully you're ready. But gentlemen, hopefully you have a good rest of your day. If you're listening to this, hopefully you have a good rest of your day, or a good night, or good morning, and we'll be back with more soon. I'm Hernan. Have a good night, everybody, or a good day, whatever. Later.